You know who that's about, right?
But he needs a talus.
He needs a talus. He knows that. Okay, the heat is good, everything is good. Let me. The microphone is good. Okay. I trust there'll be a few more people here, but we can begin. I was upstairs dealing with finances. It's amazing. A little institution, and every 2 years, big financial dealings here. Who represents, who takes care of the. Health insurance, you might think this was a major, you know, we have nothing to do with it. That's Israeli, it's not why you're in America. And yet it becomes major. Okay, today is January 2nd, 2017. It is Monday morning and a beautiful day in Yerushalayim HaKodesh. And I say good morning to those in front and to the many, many more listening across the wide expanse of the Jewish world. Before I begin, I will quote the Rav in his talk in 1975 against Rabbi Rachman. He began by saying, I have a very unpleasant task to do this afternoon. I have a very unpleasant task to do this morning, but if I don't do it, it will bother me. So let me let some steam out and feel better and thank my students for listening. The intellectual dishonesty in part of the Torah world is beyond description. And I'm amazed that I'm such a imagine the kippah srugah that I wear, the fact that I'm a religious Zionist, the fact that I know a little bit of Shas and Poskim, the fact that I have many descendants, kulam Torah, shomer shomrei Torah, mitzvot. It so disturbs that world, ad kedei kach, that blatant lies. Beyond words. This book came out, The Underground. It's the person who wrote it is not the person I'm upset with. He, Yaakov Astor, whoever he is the author. Co-author is Mordechai Neustadt. Mordechai Neustadt, if I knew a Beit Din that I could sue someone for $1 billion for intellectual dishonesty, I'd be very happy. Now, this book, The Underground, is about what went on in Russia, and on one hand, I'm very moved, I'm humbled, that I went to Moshe Scherer, and you all know the story, it appears in Washington, and everything in this book, I share it. It's like when I meet teachers in the one-year programs here in Torah Shraga or elsewhere, I say to them, you guys owe me 2% of your salary. We began it in 1969, and I, Dafka, let me state it clearly, I was a key figure. Why? Because I had a little Torah knowledge and a great deal of baseball knowledge. And that was exactly what was needed in this exporting Torah to the Anglo world. Who would ever dream? We began with 10 students, not all of them are alive anymore. Who would dream what would come out of it? And when I went to Moshe Scherer, this whole book is a result of that visit, so I deserve 2% of the credit. Now, what's amazing about this book is it talks about the visits of Agudat Yisrael to Russia, Mordechai Neustadt, who's a Yoreid, raised in Israel, born in Israel, left, went to America, got involved with travel agencies. So he was an ideal person. When I spoke with Moshe and all that happened that time, Moshe Scherer turned to him. And ultimately, they started sending shluchim, just as the Mossad was sending shluchim to Russia. This book begins as if they began the process of shluchim. There's no introductory chapter. There's nothing about the Mossad, nor no one with it. And there's not one word about Aaron Rakefet. I couldn't believe how you begin. And he concocts a story. He repeats it twice, but it's totally false. That how did they learn about what was going on in Russia? How did they learn about Elia Essas? They learned about it from Yosef Mendelovich. And twice he repeats the story. I am the one who taught Yosef Mendelovich about what's going on in Russia. Yosef Mendelovich was in the Urals, was in prison, was in labor camp. He knew nothing about what was going on in Moscow. He gets out. I got back from Russia in February of 81. He got out a month, 6 weeks later. I was the first one to meet with him and translate him when he spoke the first time in public. I just met a lady. You should know, you can check out that I'm not making up the stories. Esther Zuckerman, the sister-in-law of the famous Rav Zuckerman, she was in the audience that heard me speak at Heichal Shlomo when Yosef HaTzadik spoke in Hebrew and I translated him into English. I reproduce a letter where Yosef empowers me to work for Essas. It's in Washington. Receive the letters there, the correspondence. See the volume that Agudat Yisrael put out in memory of Moshe Sherer. See about Rakefet and Moshe. And it's unbelievable. But forget about myself. I can yet fight and yell and shout and I can state. And it's recorded, and 100 years from now, when someone will do research on what happened in Russia and do a proper historic work. So I say to them, read the underground, read Washington, read the Mossad's book, Benetif HaDamama, read the Agudat Yisrael book on Moshe Sherer, and you'll see what Aaron Rakefet was involved with and reach your own conclusions. What bothers me more is the lack of Hakara Tov. Hakara Tov, the Rav said time and again, Hakara Tov is the basis of Yiddishkeit. He quoted the Musa Svarim, and Hakara Tov, the Rav once said a vart that repeated to you, it's you shake when you say it, that Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to waive the whole Yetziat Mitzrayim because of Hakarat HaTov. Paro was Daicha yelling at the Jews, get out, get out. And Moshe Rabbeinu is looking for Atzmot Yosef. Right or wrong, the Gemara in Sota with Serach, the woman, if you talk about feminism and great women, Serach Bat Asher is one of the greatest women of all times. And she finds where the Aron of Yosef HaTzadik is. He was willing to give up Yetziat Mitzrayim in order to be Makor Tova to Yosef HaTzadik. So what really hurts me is when Rav Moshe Sherer got in touch with me and said, look, as a result of my visit, I'm setting up a committee and I'm going to turn to Mordechai Neustadt. He's a travel agent. He's going to be visiting his family in Israel. I'd like you to brief him. So I met with him, but more than my meeting, I mentioned time and again, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, my best friend for so many decades, is a Groner Lebrach, a very interesting individual. Through Tzvi Groner, I had total input into Chabad. That's how I was able to give those Shayurim. His uncle was Reb Leibel Groner, and that's how I knew so much about the Rebbe as a Litvak, but a Litvak who had a periscope into the Rebbe's office. The inner workings. So Tzvi was the one that I asked to help me and to brief Neustadt in detail, because I was busy. I was the Sarah Hood, Tzvi was the Sarah Plim. I write about this in Washington. I had to get the candidates. I had to cajole them. I had to use my power of speech. I had to double talk them to get them interested in risking their lives and going to Russia. And then when it went through the Mossad and it was approved and it was a whole security check, I can't go into details now. So then Tzvi would brief, and Tzvi spent so many hours briefing Mordechai Neustadt, and not to be mentioned at all, not to tell the truth, it is beyond words. So I say to the late Yomo, who's constantly late, I say to him, I want you to find me a Beit Din where we can sue Mordechai Neustadt for $1 billion for lack of Hakarat HaTov. Now, some of the interesting corrections, had he only contacted me. By the way, with Bronfman, with Essas, how Essas finally got out, he mentions Bronfman. Who got to Bronfman, who spent 5 long years working I lived the dual existence, taught by day, worked by night on Russia, learned Bisman Sheni Yom Veinu Laila, never gave a shiur that I was unprepared to give. And who got to Bronfman? All the documents are available. Ach, we finally saw not one mention, of a guy with a kippah through God. Worse than that, in the bibliography, I take a look, everyone is mentioned, and in scholarship you don't write titles. But here he writes titles, Rabbi, Rakefetesh, Rothkopf. He mentions my book, Washington, Dr. Aaron. Most of the world doesn't even know I have a doctorate. Maze doctorate. Yeta kenito dummy. Did you learn Treifus? What is the doctorate? Emasculate my rabbi? But wow, what a world. Okay. Now, a few corrections. Very interesting. What is this that I'm holding up? This is a map of the Moscow subway, the metro, in 1981. Yomo looked at it and told me right away, they've expanded it today. I said, Yomo, how dumb can you be? I'm talking about 81 and you're talking about 2018. My dear students, in his book, he talks about the street that became famous, the stop that became famous. That was the stop that Elia Esas, he had to get off to go to his house, Sokol. So he writes, the last stop on the line. Halavai, it would have been the last stop. Then every Tom, Dick, and Harry, any, even Donny Kaplan, had he been alive then, and I would have sent him to Russia, would have known enough to get off at the last stop. Here's where it is. It is four stops before the end. And you had to hear the announcement, Dinamo, Airport. Ah, Sokol. You know, they pronounce it differently. We say Sokol. I, what a little, but what a foolish mistake. I could please correct the next edition. Four stops from the end. The Aryeh Katzin, interesting, they never tell you his original name. Aryeh Katzin, Aryeh Avizov, the first Gemarashi he ever heard. Why didn't you ask Aryeh? Or maybe Aryeh Katzin told him. Because he's always boasts in public. My first she ever heard was from a Rav Rakefet in Moscow. Not even mentioned. They developed Aryeh. But the real name was Loba Avizov, which later becomes Aryeh Katzin. Now, they raised the question. I couldn't believe, why didn't you consult an expert? Why didn't you look? I believe I write about it in Washington. They raised the question, why did the Russian government allow this? Didn't the Rakefet is coming into Russia with his wife in the middle of winter, and a Jewish American guy from Queens. What the heck is he coming to Russia, Medavslein Meshuga, to come to Russia when it's 30 below zero, 40 below zero? So of course they searched this and checked, and I write about whatever's written in Washington, read Washington. If you don't read Washington, you don't know how to breathe Torah air, period. So I asked the boss, the boss is Aryeh Krol. We couldn't mention his name then. This is in Tel Aviv, in Rehov Albert Mendler, which doesn't exist today. It's hard, gentlemen, those of you that are over 70, it is hard to live in a world where the whole world disappears, everything you know, everyone you knew. And I write about it in the Rav, I quote the Rav, when the Rav says, youth cannot understand older people who live in a world of melancholia, a world that does not really exist anymore. So I asked Aryeh Krol, Aryeh, lama hei mashimetze? Hei yodim mi anachnu ma, anachnu misachakim itam, avo besof shel davar hei yodim. They know who we are. So Aryeh gave me a simple lesson, and you just saw it in the news this past week. No, what's the simple lesson? Yonatan, very simple. The Americans are watching how many of their people, the State Department is watching how many Americans are kicked out of Russia. The minute it reaches about 10, they kick out 10 Russians. It's tit for tat. So, and I told you, I think I mentioned it this year, I once had two shluchim, my Talmidim, Michael Strick, and Meir Schweiger. I get a call from Aryeh at 1 o'clock in the morning. He says they're going to be kicked out, it's going to be on the front page of the New York Times tomorrow.
you're immediately to call their wives and tell their wives that if anyone comes to you and asks, who are these people? What are they doing in Russia? Deny that you know them. You don't know them. You're not related. They live in America. And the next morning, the New York Times couldn't believe it. Front page. Two American businessmen kicked out of Russia. So you have to understand, the Russians sent tourists to America. Any Russian tourist going to America was a shtickle, a spy. What does that mean? He brought back a Sears and Roebuck catalog. That itself was valuable to Russia, how to make, what to sell, how to produce. You understand? This is like China. You bring something back to China today, 2 months later, they're selling and underselling and undercutting the American production. So the Russians had it tolerated. They wanted the foreign currency, but more than that, if they kick out 10 Americans, 10 Russians will be kicked out. And didn't you see it in the news, though, this past week, tit for tat? All right, Putin played the role. I'm bigger than that idiot Obama. I'm not kicking out anyone. And our new president-elect praised Putin. Ah, see, he's not as foolish, as childish, as vindictive as Obama. Okay, but here in their book, they don't know the real reason. They, like, raise the question. And their answers are laughable. Ask someone who knows. Now, I also have to mention that there is also an anti-Chabad element in the book. They're writing about the main contact for the religious Zionists for our people in Leningrad was Yitzhak Kogan, Isaac Kogan, should live and be well. Yitzhak and Sophia. Sophia Zichrona Levracha, hard for me to say Zichrona Levracha. What a tzaddikit, what a lady. What these people did in Leningrad, no mention of the fact he was a Chabadnik. I couldn't get over it. But finally, for the covet of YU, let me say something too. Yaakov Birnbaum, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the man who began Triple SJ, Student Struggle for Soviet Jewry, knew where did he begin? Where were his first students? Through Columbia, he went to the dorm, he got Jews from Columbia U, but the heart of Triple SJ centered around Yeshiva University, and that's a fact. They were the students that responded en masse, and I couldn't believe it. In the volume, Triple SJ, Columbia University, not one mention of Yeshiva University. But this is a sinful act in certain parts of the Haredi community. It's either my way or the highway. Worse than that, intellectual dishonesty. When you teach intellectual dishonesty, you cannot create Torah. There's a guy named Rakefet who wrote a review in Jewish Action defending Natan Kamenetsky's work, Making of a Gadol. And in that review, Rakefet quotes the Satmar Rav. And the Satmar Rav said, we can't create Yiddishkeit out of Falschkeit by making up stories. So I repeat the Satmar Rav, and I repeat it again, but once and for all, let me end off. For my own feelings, Baruch Hashem, I let off steam. I just earned $1 billion in letting off steam. But I have no right to be Michael, the cover of Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner. He was my best friend and Chaim Soloveitchik's best friend. You understand the relationship? I always knew what was going on, A, in Chabad, and B, in the world of Professor Chaim Soloveitchik as well. And Tzvi, the hours, what he put in, it is shameful. It wouldn't take away, you can say, we are right, Akudat Yisrael is right, Kipat Strugot are all wrong, say whatever you want, but tell the truth. Okay, now back here. Gentlemen, I corrected myself. I was right all along. You see, I'm so anxious to say I'm wrong that sometimes I just don't even see right. Remember we spoke about the date of death of Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner? Remember I said originally he died in Kislev? But I didn't believe it was Bet Kislev. Then I was at a wedding and I was told it was Bet Kislev. Then I looked up his biography by his daughter again, and I saw Bet Kislev. I saw Chaf Kislev, but my eye read Bet Kislev. So I correct myself again that I originally was right. It's not Bet Kislev. Abraham Cutler is Bet Kislev. And if anyone knows Murray Goldenhirsch, I tried to reach him 3 times already. There's no answer on the phone. He must have a cell. Everyone only answers their cellular. I don't have the number. Please tell Murray that we go back to where we were at the wedding. He is incorrect. The Rebbe is correct. Bet Kislev is Rav Aaron Cutler's yard site. It is not Rav Kutner's yard site. Regarding what I said in class, that the Mekubalim are saying that the next president is Cyrus Koresh, so my student, Rabbi Dr. Lieutenant Colonel Mark Wiener, I gotta give all the titles and cover, I don't want to wind up Dr. Rakefet. Oh my gosh, have I healed anyone? What am I, a doctor who can... The truth is, if you're not an MD, you're not even allowed to use the title. Am I right or wrong, Charlie? It's a title you use in scholarship, but not a title. I'm Dr. Akel. All right, maybe I'm wrong. Forget it. Anyway, my student Mark sent me, there's a volume by Michael Beschlush, Simon & Schuster, Presidential Courage, Brave Leaders and How They Changed America. And there's an entire chapter, you should read it, on Truman and his recognition of Israel. At the end of the chapter, Truman once said that a weeping man is an abomination. But with his reverence for the Bible and ancient history, Truman was profoundly moved to know he had helped regather the Jews in the Holy Land. Told that an Israeli village had been named Kfar Truman, the president had to cover his face with a handkerchief. Okay? And it goes on to describe the chief rabbi came to the White House in 49 as Chief Rabbi Herzog. He told Truman, quote, God put you in your mother's womb so you would be the instrument to bring about Israel's rebirth after 2,000 years. And Truman listened with tears coming down his face. Once, during a visit to Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, just after Truman had left office, evidently he got an honorary doctorate. Eddie Jacobson introduced his old friend by saying, this is the man who helped create the State of Israel. The ex-president brought Eddie up short. What do you mean, help create? I am Cyrus. So, gentlemen, what can I tell you? The Mukavalim, I don't know, I'm a Litvak, but I'm shaking. They said Trump will win. Let's see what happens now. If Truman was Cyrus the First or Cyrus the Second, there's Koresh 1, Truman 2, Halavai, Trump should be 3. Now let's get back to Rav Yitzchak Kutner. Pardon me for wasting your time, but I had to let off some steam. Rav Yitzchak Kutner, we're talking about his life again, and as I say, we're going to go through layers, deeper and deeper and deeper. The reason I began with a simplistic biography is simply that people should know who Rav Kutner was, because he's not someone like the Lubavitcher Rebbe, where even the New York Times knows the story of his life. Now, we spoke about the fact last time that Rav, and everything I'm mentioning again, we will go deeper and deeper. We spoke about the fact that he, the course of time, became closer to the Satmar Rav and actually took on the whole Satmar Rav's point of view against Zionism, and the Zionists brought about the Holocaust. And I told you, we published in the what was then the publication of the Agudat Yisrael, Jewish Observer. He published an entire article. It was not an article that he wrote. It was a Talmud wrote out the article based upon a speech he gave at the Agudat Yisrael convention, where he blamed the entire Holocaust on the state of Israel, on the Zionists. And I told you I saw it with my own eyes, Gedol Yisrael, throw that issue on the floor, stomp on it, spit at it, etc. So some people comment I was too nice to Rav Huetka, but I'm not here to express my own opinion. I want to understand Rav Huetka. But this thing about the Satmarov and a Talmud of mine, Rav Grunstein, who I spoke about yesterday, sent this to me, very fascinating little comment. The Satmarov, you all know, when the Av Beitin of Yerushalayim, the old time Av Beitin of the Eder Charei did die, they looked around how to replace him. And they hit upon the Minchat Yitzchak. The Minchat Yitzchak had been Rav in Manchester. What some of you don't know, inevitably a Rav in Chutz Laretz is much more open than someone in Yerushalayim. You know that today in the news with the Haredim in America, every second Haredi goes to college, goes to Touro, gets a degree, Machon Lepanasa. You know, the Machon Lepanasa in Borough Park. Bernie Landon told me, I faked them all out. I brought in Touro College to Borough Park, but I called it Machon Lepanasa, so there'll be no demonstrations against me. So Bernie Landon said a good word. But everyone goes, and in Lakewood you have Rebbetzins there. I know some of them have masters, some of them have doctorates, some are medical doctors. Here they asked a woman going to college, academic degree. Right now, this is in the news. So the Minchat Yitzchak was more open, and to his ultimate sorrow, the city of Tel Aviv voted him the Pras Al Shem Rav Kook for a Torah writing when Minchat Yitzchak Chelek Aleph appeared. And he sent his daughter, who was living in Israel, to receive the Pras. So when the Minchat Yitzchak was appointed Av Beitin of the Eder Charedit by the Satmaruv, there were tremendous complaints against the Satmaruv that he's appointing at CND. So the Satmaruv said to one of these complainants, one of these people giving him tzaris, the Rabbi Yoelish said to him, quote, L'kanoi efshar lehafeich tol chesfim v'yabba sha'at. You can become a Kanai within 24 hours, but to be a Talmud Chacham like the Minchat Yitzchak, it takes a lot more than 24 hours. So, all right, that was his relationship with the Satmarov, and we'll come back to it, you'll see. And we spoke last week about his relationship with Rav Kook, which we'll come back to in detail. In addition, the relationship with the Soloveitchik family becomes a very interesting story that is worthy of a movie unto itself. Rav Yitzchak Kutner begins as a Litvak. He winds up in Warsaw. When he comes to Warsaw from Berlin, he was born in Warsaw, left Warsaw, went to Israel. Remember, I described to you, went to Berlin, comes back to Warsaw. The Soloveitchik family is now in Warsaw. He was very close to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. The Rav already was in Berlin, so he didn't get to meet the Rav in Warsaw, but he did meet the rest of the family. Reb Aaron then was a kid. Reb Aaron was the fifth of the five children. The Rav was the first. There's about 15 years between them, if I'm not mistaken. And it was Reb Aaron's bar mitzvah. Reb Moshe finally gets to America. Now, the story of Reb Moshe going to America, I can't go into great detail, but you should know it was very, very difficult. What happened was the Maitre Tilui, all of you know that I drink L'chaim on September 1st. That was the day that the Maitre Tilui arrived in America, Reb Shlomo Palachek, 1922, brought by my cousin Rabbi Revel, brought to America not to raise funds, not to give drashot, but to teach the highest shiur, Yeshivas Ritz Chochanim. With the Meshitis coming to America, Yeshivas Ritz Chochanim becomes an entirely different institution on a much, much higher level. But we have no mazal, ein mazal Yisrael, right? I'm quoting Chazal. The Meshitis dies in 28, astimulitis of the gum, which today we cure with one shot of penicillin. It's no big deal. When he died, Rabbi Revel was distraught. Here he had brought the Mechiter, and after six little years, the Mechiter is gone. So he was looking around for a Rosh Yeshiva, and he wanted to bring Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Gedolei Yisrael from Europe were visiting America, raising funds for the European yeshiva. And they told him that Reb Moshe is very unhappy. He wound up in Warsaw in the Tachkamoni. The Tachkamoni was fighting with Professor Balaban, Mayor Balaban. Professor Balaban was Kulo scientific Jewish scholarship, and Reb Moshe was Kulo Torah Hashem Tamimer in this traditional sense, and couldn't tolerate some of the innovative thinking of scientific Jewish scholarship. Alex, you will find that out when you go to Bernard Verbal Graduate School. It tries to strike a balance between traditional and scientific. And they're criticized for that, because Untvedah, either one or the other, either you're yeshiva, or you have to be like Bar Ilan, like Hebrew University, you understand? And what Bernard Rebel has tried to do, now they're trying to do it in Israel, let's say the Herzog School, also tries to find the balance. It's very fascinating what's happening here, because Hebrew U is empty. Any yeshiva man who's knowledgeable can now find within the yeshiva world an outlet for Chochmat Yisrael. But okay, so Reb Moshe is very unhappy. So Rabbi Dov Revel turns to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, and he's absolutely acceptable. He is overjoyed. It's redemption. He'll come to America, Rosh Yeshiva, Litvish Yeshiva, without the problems of Chochmat Yisrael. But Reb Moshe has a lot of trouble getting a visa. Unfortunately, the consul, the embassy in Warsaw, very anti-Semitic. Now, Reb Moshe had an ingrown toenail operation. An ingrown toenail operation, I've had over my lifetime two, three, and today I go to a foot specialist regularly to cut my nails just to avoid ingrown toenail problems. It's something you're born with, the tendency. Okay, you'll see that the people who spent the podiatrist, let's say Dr. Hillel Glach, you see his advertisement, not just podiatry, but ingrown toenail. Do you know that the ambassador or the envoy, whoever was in charge in Warsaw, said this is a serious operation and we don't let sick people into America, you have to be totally healed? And it took Reb Moshe from 28 until 1929 December, he finally got the clearance that they would accept him in the United States. So for that period, Rabbi Revel came up with a solution ad hoc. It turned out to be Reb Shimon Shkup was in America. Reb Shimon Shkup, Rabbi Revel was overjoyed because Rabbi Revel, the only yeshiva he learned in, one zman he spent in Tells. He was autodidactic. He was an Eloi. He couldn't learn in a regular yeshiva, Rabbi Revel. It was not for him. He had to do it on his own. He was unique. The only yeshiva he went to was Tells when Reb Shimon was Rosh Yeshiva there. So he knew Reb Shimon Shkop, this would be wonderful. Why is Reb Shimon in America? Raising funds for the Grodno Yeshiva, which he was now the Rosh Yeshiva. He had moved on from Tells. He was Rev. Biansk and Grodno, and he established Yeshiva, Sharei Torah. So I actually have a copy of the contract. Rabbi Revel made a deal with a doctor in New York, a well-known doctor, I believe his name is Gordon, Dr. Gordon. He was a Talmud of Reb Shimon. So he arranged $10,000 a year. $10,000, 1928 money, that's like talking today, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the deal was that Reb Shimon would keep $3,000 and send $7,000 to Europe. $3,000 to Livan and $7,000 sent to Europe. And $7,000 was a fortune of money. And that would support the Grodno Yeshiva. It could be Reb Shimon came to YU to remain there permanently. I've spoken about this many times. He was very open. Reb Shimon was not like some of the Rosh Yeshiva today. He was very open and he was very happy in YU. But as Rabbi Belkin explained to me, and Rabbi Belkin saw the letter with his own eyes, Reb Shmuel Belkin was also a Talmud of Reb Shimon. Rabbi Belkin explained to me, and I spoke about this a few years ago, that the Chafetz Chaim, Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski, sent a letter to Reb Shimon, hurry back to Europe, or the yeshiva is going to close. Your son and your son-in-law cannot attract students the way you can. And that's why Reb Shimon went back. And this is the famous story. Reb Shmuel Belkin went to Penn Station and his Rebbe is on the train going to Boston. The boat was sailing from Boston to Europe. If I have all the facts correct, I'm speaking about Penn now, but at that point I had the memoir in front of me about Rabbi Belkin put out by my dear friend Victor Geller, who needs a refuah shleima. So Reb Shmuel was crying, and Reb Shimon Shkab said to him, Zevet sein good, Tvenknisht, don't cry, it's going to be good. And Rabbi Belkin came back to the yeshiva, he was a student then, and Reb Moshe arrives. Now, when Reb Moshe arrives, he was very upset. He's leaving behind Aaron Soloveitchik, not yet Bar Mitzvah. So he arranged for Rav Chutna to teach him and make the Bar Mitzvah. What's the Bar Mitzvah? I'll give you sources, you'll see, not yet, but I'll give you the sources. He was called to the Torah, and that is his Bar Mitzvah. But Rav Aaron Soloveitchik became very close to Rav Chutna. Later, when Rav Aaron grows up in America, you all know he becomes part of the Chaim Berlin faculty. And he's there for many years. When I was growing up in Chaim Berlin, it was known Rav Chutna was the Rosh Yeshiva, and the shir under Rav Chutna was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who studied in Chaim Berlin, speaks of awe of both Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who he considered one of the dominant figures in his life, and Rav Chutna as well. Those years in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin were very formative years for Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. When you talk about Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, let me make it very clear. There was a big difference between Rav Aaron and the Rav. The Rav was fed with a golden spoon. The Rav grew up, he was the eldest child of Reb Moshe. Reb Moshe was sitting off kest at that time. He was being supported by his in-laws. He was sitting, learning, no cares in the world. It's like a kid in college. Danny Kaplan graduated college because of an assist from a guy in Yerushalayim named Rakefet. All right. While he was in college, nothing to laugh. He was one class short, and miraculously, they agreed that Gris exists, that Rakefet exists, and they gave him credit for the course. It's a miracle. You don't know what we're talking about. They don't know we exist here. They're we're here. We're off the beaten path. We're in the capital of the Torah world, but they don't realize it. So, Donnie is in college. He had no problems, no cares. All he had to do was pass, learn, study, right or wrong. That's college. Reb Moshe had no problems then. At Gizitzt, at Lerin, he goes into the rabbinate for saying, Chaslovich, it's the old Europe yet. The Rav had a Rebbe practically full time. His father spoon fed him. Reb Aaron grows up in America. Reb Moshe is in America. He doesn't speak English. Has to adjust to a whole new culture. Reb Moshe is in an institution where on the bottom floor there's a Beis Medrash, and one flight up, two flights up is a college. One flight up a high school, two flights up the college, right? That's the YU we all remember. No, Reb Moshe has to adjust to an entire new world. Was not easy. Reb Aaron did it all on his own. Understand? Came to America, had to learn English, began high school. What did he know? Was in Reb Moshe's shir, studied with his father, never had any other Rebbe. All the years he studied high school and college, never had any other Rebbe. And he had problems. He told me his father, he was told he can't graduate college. He was lacking a course in gym. So if I remember correctly, he worked out that he could go to Washington, George Washington High School, which was in Washington Heights. My father went there, by the way. My father went there. My father was very brilliant. He showed me that he got Regents, 98 in Greek, 100 in math. But never the depression. He was in pharmaceutical school, And he had to leave, give up everything. And he worked for the post office, would never leave, because he knew there'll always be a post office in America. No one dreamt the day would come when emails took everything on, like in Israel. There's kamat no post office today. We get mail here once a week, if we're lucky. They're smart here. In America, they're losing billions. In Israel, they say, what, people don't use mail? Close down the post office, period. So he took a course swimming, I think, if my memory is correct. Brown, he told it to me, I mean, ear to ear. So he comes to Chaim Berlin. But you see, over the years, it was inevitable. If Reb Yitzchak Kuttner is moving away from Rav Kook, his Rebbe, then he certainly is moving away from the Soloveitchik family. You understand? It becomes nishbakvemt. It's not comfortable. Not comfortable to be a Soloveitchik in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. Okay? And I've heard all... This is in the 1960s already. Not comfortable, not comfortable. There's a shift here in values. Now, I'll say something else which we'll go into much deeper, but I want to say it right now and you'll understand something very fascinating. If you recall, I said to you a number of weeks ago, why am I going to deal with Reb Yitzchak Kuttner? I dealt with the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I'm dealing with the history of Torah in the United States. I'm waiting to begin the history of the Orthodox Rabbinate in America, 1900, 1960. As I told you, I can't go beyond 60, because from 60 on, I'm a player. Before 60, I'm objective. It's Bernard Revel Graduate School. After 60, I am prejudiced. I'm no geyer b'davar, okay? But there's plenty to talk about. But why did I pause to do Rav Kuttner? Because I said to you, of all the Rosh Yeshiva in America, Rav Kuttner was idiosyncratic. He adjusted to America, and he developed a unique derech. It's not like Reb Moshe Feinstein. You saw yesterday the tshuvat I quoted from Reb Moshe, how Reb Moshe refuses to adjust to the United States. Reb Menashe Klein, on the same topic, adjusted a lot more. But Reb Moshe Rasid, you can't even have a youth minyan if you know the kids are going to be driven by their parents to shul on Shabbos. Reb Moshe, if you take Reb Moshe, it means you can't even have a shul the way Maplewood Jew, the way Beth Ephraim began. I told the story yesterday in detail to fit it into the tshuva, but the way Beth Ephraim began, based upon Jews driving to shul on Shabbos to do the doctor who founded this Orthodox shul a favor, so he should have a minyan. You understand? So, Yitzchak Kuttner was unique. He already was an entire different story. His development was in America, not in Poland or not in Palestine. He was a product of America. Now, who was very similar to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner? Mori Rebbe, the Rav. The Rav was a product of America. The Rav comes to America, a Litvish Rav, all right, with a PhD from Berlin. The PhD, as I said before, it's not called yet a Knittel Dummy. It's not, didn't take away his basic gestalt. No one would call the Rav a Dr. Soloveitchik. He was Rabbi, all right, Rabbi Doctor. But Rabbi, you can't leave out the title Rabbi.
Did the Rav and Rav Kuttner know each other in Berlin?
There certainly had to be some acquaintanceship, but I think Berlin, Rav Kuttner's years in Berlin, let me just see, it's... 3 years after the Rav got there. So they were not, it's not like the Rebbe who got there basically the same time the Rav did. It was not the same depth of relationship.
And Rav Kuttner, what did he study?
He autodidactic. He attended some classes. What's the word? Audited. That's the word I was looking for.
Philosophy and science?
I would say philosophy was much more flat. But we'll see. I'm going to go into a whole description of Rav Kuttner, but not yet. Give me another few minutes. But I want to say something. Set your minds working already. The Rav too developed in America. He came to America. His dream was to be a Yudapeya Shurav. His dream was to emulate Rav Lazer Silva. and the aggravation of the rabbinate, the Kashrut scandals, what the man went through in the 1930s in Boston, he winds up in a little classroom in Yeshivas Rebbe Kolchanan, succeeding his father, and that too was after a bitter battle, a bitter fight. And out of that little classroom, he became the Rav. In the 1940s, even in YU, they referred to the Rav the way they referred to him in Lakewood, when I learned in Lakewood, which I cannot repeat, just using his initials. If you know what I'm talking about, you know, Yadov, you know what I'm referring to?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to say it because I'm a Talmud, Loma Imli. But even his Talmidim referred to him as J period, etc., B period. Even his Talmidim, by the night, he developed. By the 1950s, he was the Rav. It was already, wow. And not only did he develop, but his whole homiletical, philosophical thrust, you could see the interaction with the American scene. In when he became Rosh Yeshiva, you know, everyone looked at him, a young man from Boston, you know, people, lefargen, it's the only Hebrew word I know of that came from a Yiddish word. It's interesting, I never knew that. Lefargen is from, how do you say that in English? I don't know. Mefaginenish, the fargen. You don't allow, you know, why the hell did he succeed? What does he know that I don't know? He has yiches, he's a Soloveitchik. If I would be a Soloveitchik, I'd be five times as big. You know, we're morons the way people speak. I hold that Aricha Jamim Tovin, you have to fargen, you have to. Yeah, right, let everyone else succeed. If I was writing a book on the whole story of Russia, I would write six chapters on what Agudat Yisrael did, with feeling, with emotion, with love, with respect, but give credit. How did it begin? Where did it come from? You understand? Don't reconstruct. I can give you more examples from Art Scroll, where they absolutely reconstruct, and I sent letters, let me get answers. The one rabbi who promised me, if you got an answer, I'll see to it. No, he's disgraced today. No one wants to mention his name. They had to bury his books. Oscar had to bury thousands of books that they didn't sell because the author let's forget it. So, B, give credit. Okay, the Rav, out of that little classroom, when he took over the position, he had to establish a rep. Now, what did he publish? What did he write in the early 40s? This is magnum opus. Isha Halacha. Isha Halacha. Isha Halacha. Never say that the Kashrut Shem was written at the same time.
Well,
but
the original version.
The original version. I'm well aware.
I'm
well aware of it. You don't know how well aware I am. They finally told the Rebbe, if you make any more changes, the RCA is going to go bankrupt. The article was already in type, and the Rav was still playing games. And it's before computerization. Today, to make changes is nothing. But then it was money. So, but Ish Halacha, classic work, Ish Halacha. Ish Halacha, what does that have to do with America? That's Litvak, that's Lithuania. It's classic, a statement of Rav Chaim. Years later, the lonely man of faith. That's America. That's the philosophy on the streets. That's the individual. That's the culture. That's post-World War II. Lost in a crowd. The lonely man of faith. Peace of mind. The Rav is reacting. He couldn't handle the peace of mind. Right? We spoke about it years ago. Couldn't handle that work. He was upset by it. Peace of mind. Religion doesn't give you peace of mind, but you could hear the Rav, his talk, for instance, on Mordechai and Esther, the role of the woman, the role of the man. 1970s, reacting to what's on the street. Family Redeemed, his famous talk on the feminine personality and on the male personality. What a masterpiece. No, in Europe they were interested in Volusians a little bit. The Rebbetzin was a strong personality at the second Rebbetzin, it's his second wife. All right. But in America, this is what they're talking about. You can see the Rav interacting. He is the Rav. not of Lithuania, Lithuanian origins, but the Rav of Boston and New York. You with me, Dove? You understand? So now, very fascinating. Both these individuals developed in America, totally changed their shtanz as the years went by. Rav Hutna and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. One tremendous difference. The Rav Klape Pnim remained the Litvak at the core. Klape Chutz, layers were added. Sophistication. Development. Tradition and renewal. New context. Was not a shame to hide it from the masses. He paid a price. I've been asked 1,000 times, did it bother the Rav that the right-wing world rejected him? But the Rav's death, there was a big TV program, and they interviewed me, they interviewed Rabbi Dr. Professor Yaakov Blitzstein, Jerry Blitzstein, you know the name, he's retired, he was down south, University of Beersheba University. He's a grandson of the Mabit. His Zayda was the Rav Tamishov, was an Adam Gadol, a Rav in Brooklyn, a Slutska. And Jerry, a little guy, you ever meet Rabbi Blitzstein, Jerry Blitzstein, professor, whatever name you know him by. Jerry, a little guy, maybe 5'2", 5'3". What a mind, what a mind. It's like they tell about Rav Baruch de Leibowitz visiting Rav David Kalin, Rav David Friedman, and Rav Baruch Leibowitz started dancing around Rav David Kalin, and he said, as a kleine yid, such a small Jew, he's 4'9", you can see pictures of him, and what that man knows, kol ha-Torah kula at his fingertips. So Jerry, the little guy, brilliant guy. So we were asked this very question. And Jerry said he felt the Rav, there was a little bit of a bad feeling, a depressed feeling in the Rav that his colleagues, who should have been his best friends, did not understand him. I never felt that way. I'll say maybe Jerry knew the Rav better than I did at that time. It could be. Over the years, I certainly think I picked up on my knowledge of the Rav and my relationship with him. But I never thought the Rav felt that way. The Rav felt, this is the 20th century, this is the Western world, this is the way we have to proceed. If you don't believe my analysis is correct, open up volume 2 of the Rav, The World Of, and you'll see where I quote the Rav syllable by syllable, where the Rav actually says this openly. I never felt it. It really bothered him. I don't know, it's like Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein also was iconoclastic, and I don't think it bothered him that others didn't accept his viewpoint. He was a Gaon and a Tzaddik, but he had his own viewpoint.
Which
Rabbi Yitzchak Kutna, just think for 1 minute, was exactly the opposite of the Rav. On the outside, one of the crowd. Rosh Yeshiva, semi-Hasidic Rebbe, long beard, black clothes, a sputik, a shtickle, a strimal, chassidish begotten. On the inside, totally different than Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, than Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, than Rabbi Aaron Kotler. Very fascinating. On the outside, like everybody else. On the inside, Rav Hutna, the Talmud Chacham, the Litvak, the Chassid, the philosopher, the Dashan, the Maimarim, the Maharal. Very fascinating. Contrast the two and you'll see two different worlds, two different approaches. Mori Rebbe, on the inside, Kulo Torah, Kulo Brisk. On the outside, a brisker in the 20th century, a brisker embracing the Western world. Totally, totally at home, at ease, not ashamed to hide it from anyone, to obscure it, to diminish it. Rav Hutna, exactly the opposite. Very fascinating. And what did you want to say, Alex?
Which people are we talking about? Didn't the Rav have certain other gedolim that he,
Alex, the Rav, we don't have to, the Rav certainly had relations with many gedolim, but they were on isolated areas. In other words, with the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he could also speak about science. He could talk about, I'm saying in theory, art, music. He appreciated the Breitkeit. How do you say that in English? The Breitkeit, the broad vistas of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. With Rav Aaron Cutler, he spoke in halacha.
Right.
He spoke in learning. With Rav Moshe, he spoke in halacha. But he couldn't talk with Rav Moshe in contemporary philosophy. Understand? He had relations, but there were various levels. The Rav Hutna had perfect relations with all these individuals, but inside he was very, very different. And here you come.
Which, you mean because he was similar in some ways to the Rav?
I'm saying he was, at the totality, he was similar to the Rav and the Rebbe. But I'm making the point, on a practical level, they were the antithesis of each other.
Just because of
his personality, because of him.
But he valued those things? He continued to value those things?
Well, you'll see in 1 second that he continued to value philosophy. My marb, it overtook his shayurim, it overtook everything.
Well, but that's
okay, well, but that's watch. And very interesting. Now, Professor Sid Lyman, I think this is, of all his scholarship, you've all heard the name, Professor Sid Lyman. I believe he's also taught at Bernard Revel over the years, taught at Brooklyn College, lives in Kew Gardens Hills. A wonderful individual. His father lived around the corner from me in Israel. His father was one of the old-time Talmidim of Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. He was the founding of Dean, principal, guiding spirit of Highline, Hebrew Institute, Long Island, which when it began, it was revolutionary. What is Highline today? It's Haftar, it's merged many times over. Yeah. So he was one of the leading spirits behind it. He was a Talmud of Rav Shruv, maybe the Talmud Mufak of Mr. Mendelovich at Teir Vadas. I assume you know who I'm talking about, Rav Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, Mr. Mendelovich, legendary figure. So, after World War II, the yeshiva really picked up in America. Yeah, before World War II, all the yeshiva were small in numbers, small in size. And everyone who went to yeshiva, whether you went to yeshiva college, or you went to Chaim Berlin, you went to Teir Vadas, you went to RJJ, everyone went to college. It was a given. And yeshiva college had the advantage it was in one building. The other yeshivat had the disadvantage, but nevertheless, it was, you traveled and you went separately. It was Brooklyn College, City College, many wound up in Columbia University. Very bright individuals came out of all these yeshivat who went on to college careers. Some remained frum, and lo aleinu, some didn't remain frum. Many became conservative rabbis, reform rabbis, and it didn't matter. We spoke about this yesterday, but yesterday we spoke in terms of Yeshiva College and the JTS. But even I can tell you in Philadelphia, one of the biggest conservative rabbis was the Teir Vadas boy. And all over you would dig up, as you all know, one of the big reform rabbis, Harry Scherer, was a Teir Vadas boy. No, went on to become one of the big reform rabbis. As far as I know, he's still alive. Unbelievable. Halavai la'aricha jamam tovim, nishit b'chayse b'tshuva shlema. So, but after World War II, Rav Aaron comes to America, and Rav Aaron is totally opposed to college. Rav Aaron, a very charismatic individual, And now all the yeshiva, should the boys go to college? Shouldn't they go to college? The atmosphere at college. And what was the complaint against YU? The complaint against YU was, how do you take the maiden of Torah, Chochmah, the secondary part of knowledge, and put it under the same roof with Torah Tashem Tamima? Look into the Tshuvot, which I spoke about over the decades, of Baruch Be'er Leibovitz, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, and this was exactly their attitude. How do you take the Shifcha and the Gevirta and you put them in one bedroom? Who heard of something like this? With all that's involved in college education? Okay. No, go to Brooklyn College, go to Queens College. Yeah, but there are problems there too. First of all, men and women together, number one. Number two, the dress, at least at YU, there's a dress code. Public, you know what's going on in colleges, the 50s, the 60s, what you have today, you can go into college half naked, no one's going to say a word. Here in Israel, with the Knesset, they went after the women and the length of their skirts. It's, you know what's going on. And they accused the Knesset of politics, the police force there. But all right, they want to keep dignity to the building. People shouldn't walk in the way they walk around at the beach. So, and then, at least in Yeshiva University, if someone says up courses, someone will challenge him. In Brooklyn, in Queens, say whatever you want, do whatever you want. So Rav Hutna and Mr. Mendelovich, who represented her, these were the two biggest yeshivot in Brooklyn, the Hasidic yeshivot haven't gotten off the floor yet. The two biggest yeshivot, and they still may be the two biggest yeshivot until today. I don't know if any Hasidic yeshiva, it could be Sfatem, it could be that there are other yeshiva today which are bigger. Chaim Berlin and Teira Vedas come up with a plan to establish a college for yeshiva boys. A college that would be under the sponsorship of all the yeshivot in New York City, particularly the yeshivot in Brooklyn, and they already had a charter from New York State, from the Board of Regents. We're talking about 47, 48, and they were ready to begin. This would have been revolutionary, and they couldn't go ahead with it because Rabbi Aaron Kudlow was adamantly, totally, completely opposed. That yeshiva should sponsor a college with secular studies, this is against the very grain of Rabbi Aaron Kudlow. This is a bizayon of the Torah. How do you have time to waste on college? You all know Rabbi Aaron's point of view. This was Rabbi Aaron's point of view, that if the yeshiva officially establish a college, it's giving a heksha to this type of education. Now, look who the people who were behind it. Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner and Rabbi, but insisted on being called Mr. Shraga Feivel Mendelovich. Rabbi Shraga Feivel Mendelovich was Hungarian origins. He was a Talmud Chacham. I can't say he was a Gadol B'Torah. He was not a Litvisha, but he had a wide range of knowledge. He knew Rav Shemshon Rafal Hirsch backwards and forwards. He knew Rav Kook. He was very open. He was very knowledgeable. You notice he and Rav Hutna, look at the two who were behind this idea. And this just shows you, once again, inwardly, he was a very different person than the outward appearance. Read Professor Lyman's writings. You can find it in Tradition. You can Google him. He had a major article in Tradition years ago. This is quoted widely by William Helmreich in his work on the yeshiva world, which we'll quote in the future weeks to come. But I stand on what I'm saying. Very interesting comparison between Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner and Mori Urebi, Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik. Now, what we're talking about was reflected in Rav Hutner's dress. We said he came to America clean shaven. He wore mutton clothes. A kurzer rekel, we say in Yiddish, a short jacket, like we wear today. Within a year in America, as I mentioned, they say he spoke almost the perfect English. Could get up in shul and give a drusher in English. Reb Moshe couldn't do it. Reb Yaakov couldn't do it. Rav Huttner was younger when he got to America, and he had that gift, as we will see, to become part of the culture in which he lived. Over the years, this Litvak, this American, who a beard, adapted the Hasidic garb of his youth in Warsaw. As I mentioned before, a spudik hat for Shabbos, which is a mini strimal, I would call it, wore a flowing black robe type of bekesher on Shabbos, wore a gatel. He also did something else, insisted upon something else, which has very deep repercussions in the Huttnerian life story and in what developed in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. He introduced to America a concept of Kavod HaTorah. He was called to task, called to order about this many times. Kavod HaTorah, overdone, I'll tell you, give you stories, but documented, but not now. Overdone. Well, Kavod HaTorah, that you had to stand up for him goes without saying. But never allowed to use his name. He was called the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva had gesagt, the Rosh Yeshiva munt, demands, claims, says, the Rosh Yeshiva. And he was asked, why? Why all this hakpada? And his answer was, he found in America an absolute zilzal of Talmidei Chachamim. And my dear students, this is so true, it is painful to talk about it. You go back to the 1920s, the 1930s, the Orthodox Rabbanim, that there was no respect for them whatsoever. Who are they? What are they? Who cares? Look at the way they think in Yiddish. Look at the way they speak. Look at the way they dress. Outlandish. Civilization gone by. Read the Silver Era. See what I quote there, what was said about the Rabbanim who wanted to speak to Roosevelt to save Jews and what his Jewish advisors told them about these bearded gentlemen. This was the America that Rav Huttner came into, and it troubled him, it bothered him. See, the Rav was caught up in this, but he left later. When he suffered, but as the years went by, his beard became smaller. One time he had no beard, then a little Van Dyke. The beard that you all know the Rav with, his older Talmidim like myself, when we look at the Rav with that beard, it hurts us. Can anyone tell us why? That's a Avelut beard. His wife died, he never shaved again. I would have advised Rebbe, if you want to grow a beard, you have to take off the Avelut beard and then grow a beard independently of what was before. Not an Avelut beard. Nuke, who can tell me what I'm referring to? Who built Torah in Israel? Who changed the whole concept of how we educate? Harav Moshe Tzvi Neria. His father, Rav Menken, was a product of the Lushan. Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria was a Litvisher, but he became a Mizrachist, the B'nai Akivanik. And when they decided to establish the first B'nai Akiva Yeshiva in Kfar HaRoeh, they said, you're going to be the Rosh Yeshiva? But the Rosh Yeshiva has to have a beard. It was during the 3 weeks. So he said, fine, I'll leave my beard on. No, no. You can't be Rosh Yeshiva with a sphere of, with a 3-week beard of Avelet. You'll shave after the 3 weeks, and then you'll grow your beard. And that is a true story. I know the Neri family, by the way. Parts of it. What an individual. Okay? The Rav, when we knew the Rav, he was clean shaven. We used to say the Van Dyke is there just so he can enter rabbinic circles. His dress, over the, he used to wear originally, knew who can tell me, a Bekeshon Shabbos, a Prince Albert, long clothes, the Rambam, you have to change your clothes, you wear short clothes all week, it's the Gemara in Shabbos, the Rambam. No, covered Shabbos, you have to wear a longer garment, something different. Over the years, he wore a regular suit, not just on weekdays, but on Shabbos as well. Never wore a black hat. He wore a gray hat or a blue hat, a brown hat, I should say brown or gray. His favorite color was brown. That's why the color I chose, the two volumes of the Rav, to have two different shades of brown. And I confirmed this with, I was absolutely right, confirmed it with his family. And you see, he totally, later in life, when lo aleinu, he couldn't function on his own, he needed help with Talmidim. So when he needed a new hat, they bought him a black hat. You understand? There's someone in Efrat, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Klausner, what is his name does he use today? Not Klausner, Yedidja. Rav Yosef Chaim Yedidja, Klausner. So when he learned with the Rav, he was my Talmud first, then the Rav, then he was my Talmud again. Interesting individual. So, anyone know him? Anyone know who I'm talking about? Efratna? He never married. He has a shtibble there. I don't know. I don't know the details, but it's very capable, very knowledgeable, but a sad life story. His parents married late. He was born, his father was over 50. No one ever played baseball with him. He was the type of kid who could get along with people 40, 50 years older, but he didn't know how to relate to his own peers. It was my Talmud yet in Rehov Abavanel, if I'm not mistaken, all the way, but all the way back to Abavanel. So the Rav, they brought him a hat and they had his initials in it, JBS, and it didn't fit the Rav properly. So the Rav gave it away. Klausner wanted it or what, and he insisted on paying the Rav. I think he gave the Rav $2 for that. He said, Sona Matana Jichya. He has that hat until today, JBS in it. I remember seeing it. You know what that hat would be worth if the Rav was Chassidic Rebbe? Do you know what that hat would be worth today? Someone to buy that hat, they would auction it off. The starting price would be $100,000, and I'm not exaggerating. A hat that the Rebbe wore, and it has JBS in it. Oh my gosh. But you see, the difference between Rav Hutner and Moriah Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. Now, with all this being said, Rav Hutner raised a tremendous... before I go into the Talmud, let me just tie together with this concept of Kavod HaTorah and centrality of the Rosh Yeshiva. Ultimately, it brought about a situation in Metifta Chaim Berlin where everything centered around the Rosh Yeshiva. You see, you take Yeshiva University. In Yeshiva University, the Rav was the Rav, but there were plenty of other Rosh Yeshiva students who are happy to be in Rav David Lifshitz. People studied with Rav Moshe Shapskis. There were many personalities in the yeshiva. The Rav was the dominant personality, don't misunderstand me, but there was plenty of room for choice and a large firmament, a large horizon, different rebbeim, different viewpoints, Tells, Slabatka, Ratten, Briss, Mir, I mean, in my time, I don't know, in Dov's time, I don't know if it wasn't already, even in Gadisha, Rabbi Gerstenfeld, you had a Hungarian, and there was a whole smicha program that went through Rabbi Gerstenfeld. It wasn't the same elevated smicha that you got from the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin and Rav Moshe Shatskis, but Rav Shmuel Gerstenfeld. Ultimately, in Rav Chaim Berlin, what happened, almost the entire original faculty was phased out. And you wound up with a faculty of Talmidim, of Rav Hutna. It became totally centered around the Rosh Yeshiva. And I can give you names, some of the original faculty that I recall. First of all, in this class, I have to mention one of the dominant figures in Rav Chaim Berlin was Rav Yisrael Snow. Can anyone tell me who Rav Yisrael Snow was? That was Vic Snow's uncle. Vic Snow, who's still in New York. I think he flies to Florida, tomorrow. Tomorrow. And he's not there yet. No, no.
Yeah, he's in Florida. I don't think he went to New York.
No, I just spoke with him Friday. Take my word for it. His name is Vic Snow, not Vic Rain. If he had remained here, it would be Vic Rain. He ran away from the rain. They got up in the snow. You know what New York has been under? And he's visiting his siblings there. And I think either the 3rd or 4th of January, he flies to his home in Florida. So then he becomes Vic Rain. Rabbi Yisrael Snow was an American-born Talmud Chacham who went to Europe in the 30s, studied in Europe, came back to America, a beloved Rebbe, but he was not a Hutnerian. He was a product of a different world. He ultimately left. There was a Rabbi Priskin from the famous, the Shikol of Rav's family, Rav Pesach Priskin's family. He was a first cousin to Rav Yitzchak Kutner's wife. He left. A name that you all know, Rabbi Shurkin, Michal Shurkin's father, who was, in my time, one of the prime Rosh Yeshivas in Masifta Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. He left, and I can give you more names of people that were there, but ultimately left. The ranks were filled by his own Talmidim / Hasidim. More than that, Rav Hutna was a tremendous Rebbe, a tremendous Mechanech, a beloved Mechanech. Had a tremendous influence on endless students, as we will see, and we will see why and how. But over the years, you had to become a Hutnerian. If you didn't shape up, you had to ship out. And it's very fascinating, from the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, you can give an endless list of Talmidim who became great, who studied with Rav Hutna. Beginning with the late 50s into the 60s already, you can give an endless list of those who were there and those who left as well. And one of the names that's often thrown around is Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and there's a whole story which I cannot validate, and I can't ask Rabbi Aaron, he's not here, but this story came to me recently, that when Rav Snow left Chaim Berlin, that's when Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein decided to go to Yeshivas Rav Yitzchok Hanan. So, yeah, a lot that was said about this period, good, and the gossip of the tensions underneath the surface.
Did Rav Aaron Lichtenstein have a close relationship with Rav Hutna?
He always spoke highly of Rav Hutna, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, being the absolute tremendous gong that he was, certainly Rav Hutna sought him out. These were the students that Rav Hutna went for. Now, let me mention some of the names of the Talmidim. Let me end off with a beautiful, moving story. Natan, once again, the Rebbe was daydreaming. Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg remains the title of next week's Shayur. For today's Shayur, you can call it Let's just think for a moment what we've been talking about. Call it Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, the inside and the outside. Okay? Gentlemen, some of his Talmidim. Most prominent, his own son-in-law, Yonason David, Harav Yonason David, who lives right here, has the Pachad Yitzchak Kollel in Harnof. That's his son-in-law. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein always spoke highly of Rav Hutner and considered him one of his three dominant Rebbeim, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, Rav Hutner, and the Rav. Rabbi Hirsch Diskin, those of you from Baltimore should recognize the name, son-in-law of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Talmud of Rav Hutner, long-time head of the Beis Yaakov School for Girls in Baltimore. Charlie, how does your brother tie in? He succeeded Rav Diskin, or that he succeeded Rav Diskin? What's your brother's first name?
Naftali.
Naftali. So you see, you have a direct connection sitting here right in front of you. But a name that some of you will recognize from the OU and CSY, the founder, Rabbi Pinchas Stopler. He was a Talmud Mufak of Rav Hutner, right or wrong. Rab Avraham Davis, founder of Mitzudat Religious Book Series. You've seen his name, translations, editorship, time and again. Perhaps the most famous Talmud of Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner and of my mother-in-law, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, Mrs. At that time, she was known as Miss Brill, his third grade teacher, Rav Shlomo Freifeld. No, just to mention that name, we should be standing. Rav Shlomo Freifeld, Rav Hutner's Talmud, dressed like Rav Hutner, to a certain degree, thought like Rav Hutner. What he built, Balei Tshuva, the outreach, Rav Shlomo Freifeld, third grade teacher, was Miss Brill. Miss Brill marries. And the principal of the yeshiva she taught in, Rabbi Schmidman, told me, I've been very unhappy that your mother-in-law got married. I said, why? I wouldn't be standing here talking to you if not for my wife, her daughter. He said, she was the greatest teacher I had. And she was the third grade teacher. She had Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, she had Rabbi Aaron Schechter, the present Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, also Talmud of Rav Hutner. I'll throw out another name, Rabbi Yehoshua Fishman of Torah Mesorah, Josh Fishman, who when I came into Torah Mesorah to meet someone there, he was ashamed that anyone should see that he knows me. Y'all know what I spoke about at the start of Shia today. I knew him from Bnei Akiva, inside out, Josh Fishman, Yehoshua Fishman. Ah, Talmud of Rav Hutner, Torah Mesorah, more than that. And this man, more broad, is a very interesting individual. The Novominska Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Perlau, who heads up Agudat Yisrael today. He too was a Talmud of Rav Hutner. I'm absolutely certain someone would ask him who got Agudat Yisrael interested in Russia, he would say, Rav Aaron Rakefet from Yerushalayim. Oh, someone I knew very well, Rav Meir Belitsky, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. He was the founding rabbi of the University of New Hyde Park. I believe he was the first rabbi there. Correct me if I'm wrong. He was there for decades upon decades. What a wonderful individual. He was the Talmud of Rav Hutner. Rav Noach Weinberg, no, what are we talking about now? Eish HaTorah, right or wrong, what they have accomplished in the world. Ach, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, Nei Yisrael, Talmud of Rav Hutner, never allowed on the Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, because he had college degrees and he was proud of it, and he encouraged his students in Nei Yisrael. They worked out deals with John Hopkins, right, elsewhere. Get a college degree, get a profession. Wow, wow. Wait, we're not finished. Rav Feivel Cohen of Brooklyn, the order of Badei HaShulchan that all of you study when you're studying Yerideya, Talmud of Rav Hutner. Rav David Cohen, Gvul Yavitz, no, absolutely a Talmud of Rav Hutner. The famous story where he criticizes the Rav. And right here in Yerushalayim, Zechariah Dershowitz, you don't recognize the name, he's in his 90s today. Dershav, he hebraized the name Dershowitz, Dershav. And he was a brilliant social scientist, Talmud Mufak of Rav Chutna. But my dear students, let me end off with one of the fascinating Talmidim of Rav Chutna, and let me give you a little clue from his autobiography. Someone whose son was a Talmud in this very Kollel, Rabbi Dr. Professor David Halivni Weiss. Have you heard the name? Make believe you have, so the ignorant pass for the wise. You follow me, Dovi? Oh, wow. Dovi, Rav David Halivni Weiss wrote a memoir, and it's worth reading. It's called The Book and the Sword. And very briefly, he was a Hungarian, went through the hell of the Holocaust, was in a concentration camp, had one page, I think it was from the tour, that's all he could look at for so many months, no svarim, young fellow, brilliant mind, photographic memory, and finally survives, he arrives in America. This story here, I might as well tell it to you, it's so funny, and he makes a mistake here, but he talks about when he came to America, he started to visit the various rabbanim. He wanted to see what was going on. He went to the Satma, he tries to go into YU, he comes to YU, he takes an exam, Rav Yerucham Gorelick introduces him to Rav Zaks, and he calls him the Ungarische, the Hungarian. Dov, he said he was offended. He told this to Rabbi Chutna later, he was offended, he's Hungarian, they looked down upon him. He says that he was put into Rav Zaks' shir. There's no such thing. Rav Zaks didn't teach a shir. He meant he was sent for a bechina to Rav Zaks. That's what probably happened. Anyway, he was a kid at the time, a teenager, very upset. Rav Chutna, he goes to Chaim Berlin, Rav Chutna already, who was also a shtickle, could appreciate a Hungarian. He was makarifim, and he becomes a Talmud in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. And later he broadens, you all know he goes on to the seminary, he gets involved in Chochmat Yisrael, and he was the leading professor at JTS. When Reb Shaul Lieberman died, he took Reb Shaul Lieberman's place, but ultimately he had to leave the seminary because they moved so far to the left, he did not feel comfortable there. And he writes, beginning on page 147, for years after I left the yeshiva, Funk the Chaim Berlin, I carried in my wallet a piece of paper until it was torn to shreds. You know what this piece of paper was? This kid had no money, had no relatives, comes to Brooklyn. He didn't have money. Everyone, Pesach time, you buy new shoes, buy a new suit. Rav Chutna gave him a tzetel, how do you say that in English, a little piece of paper authorizing some clothes store that Rav Chutna knew to please give him a suit and shoes, and he would pay for it. So the first suit that he got in America, Rav Chutna paid for. And he describes here, when I arrived in 1947, some old ladies from the yeshiva's ladies' auxiliary used to stick a few dollars in my pocket. The old ladies died, and I had no money to buy myself clothes. Rabbi Chutna was aware of this and in a gracious manner alleviated my plight. After 1940, a rabbi in Brooklyn, who later comes back to Israel, Rabbi Aaron Wertheim, he was involved with Yad Tamar. It's a whole story. He did a doctorate at Dropsy on Hasidus. I quoted his book many times. The Wertheim family adopted David Halivni Weiss, and they took care of his needs. But he describes a conversation with Rav Chutna. Rav Chutna saw to it that I was socially comfortable in the yeshiva. It had very few refugee students. Most of the students were American-born. You know, this is the 50s already. And he would have private conversations with Halev Weiss, and they spoke the same language. They were Europäische, Gereta, Geschmach in Yiddish to each other. And Rabbi, and he quotes her further telling him, look, you can go to any yeshiva, but I can give you something here that you can't get anywhere else. And what he was referring to, it seems to me, were his Mussishmus, and literally ethical talks. But in fact, they were more in the nature of theological talks. The Mussishmus were considered by many to be the pride of the yeshiva. Rav Hutner inherited and further developed semi-mystical interpretations of biblical and rabbinic texts, which he presented in a conceptual framework resembling a shir, but was delivered not as a lecture, but as a talk with emotional overtones. Are you listening, Alex? This is an eyewitness account. This is what Rav Hutner called his maimarim. And this became the heart of Rav Hutner. Remember what I told you a few weeks ago? The Sheyurim and Shas and Paiskin became less, and the maimarim became more. And then he ends off on a personal note that he was not attracted. Unfortunately, he was not attracted by the emotional quality of the talks and did not share the mystical suppositions accompanying them. And that's exactly, it sounds like who? Reb Shaul Liebman. Remember what Reb Shaul Liebman did to Professor Heschel at the seminary? Remember what we spoke about years ago? That sounds exactly like Reb Shaul Liebman. So fascinating how Reb David HaLivni Weiss begins, and a beautiful compliment to Rav Yitzchak Hutner, how he took him under his wings and bought him his first suit and pair of shoes. My dear students, allow me to reiterate. What did we do today? A little bit more of Rav Hutner's life, covering where we left off last week, the Satmar, covering the Rav, covering his shift, his change, the college that never was. Imagine what could have been if the biggest word in the dictionary. Okay, but history says it was different. Forget the word if. The Kavodat Torah, the Rosh Yeshiva, the faculty change, faculty shift, and the students. Fascinating. But we've just set the stage. Be'ezrat Hashem, next week, we really go into Rav Hutner's life. And he introduced you to one of the finest pieces written about the American Rashi Yeshiva. I'll introduce you to Rabbi Dr. Hillel Goldberg. Fascinating material. So, to remind you, next Sunday, there are no classes. It is Asar B'Tevet. Someone said to me, Asar B'Tevet, so soon? Someone said that to me yesterday. I looked at them. Where do you think we are? We just, Rosh Chodesh Tevet. Didn't Friday we have the interesting laning? I was walking out of my office at 9 o'clock and a kid was running over to me from Torah Shraga, who evidently was running one of the late minyanim here. What do we do for the laning? What do we do for the laning? So I told him, Baruch Hashem, I davened this morning and I saw what they did. You forget from year to year. But two Torahs, the first three aliyah are Rosh Chodesh, and then you do the aliyah of Hanukkah. If it would have fallen Rosh Chodesh one day later, three Sifrei Torah, and then what do you do for the laning? Okay. Now, the freebies, I have a lot. This is what we spoke about yesterday. If anyone wants, this is all one should be stapled together. These are all the sources about inviting someone to daven in your shul who's going to come by car, or inviting someone to your home on Friday night who's going to come by car. So those are all the sources there. Gentlemen, you won't believe it, but my friend Rabbi Marvin Heyer, an East Side boy, is going to deliver the prayer at Donald Trump's inauguration. My wife is betting on Hacky Lookstein, but I guess he wants to stay away from trouble. But do you know Marvin Heyer? This is Wiesenthal, the man who picked Wiesenthal. He talks like an East Side Jew, like a Brooklyn boy, and they love it in Hollywood. This is an article from the New York Times that should be read. It's shocking, but I explained to my wife what I think. It's about a lady raped at Stanford University, and in order to find the person who raped her guilty, it has to be a unanimous vote by the committee, and they can't get it, and the guy is playing football, and they voted she's right. You know what it is? I'll tell you what the problem is today, and it's in Israel too, it reflects. If you're not a Torah Jew, and I hope I'm right 90% of the time. So sex today is nothing. It's like going into a restaurant and ordering steak. So there's consensual relations all over the place. When you say someone raped you, what do you mean he raped you? You're in college. You're sleeping around. Everyone is sleeping around. Who's not sleeping around? Oh, to prove he raped you, you have to be 100% convincing with witnesses. That's what I think it is, but it's beyond words. I can't believe what I read there. Big news in New York. Police officers will be able to wear beards and turbans so that anyone who's a high school graduate from Borough Park can now become a police officer. Chabadnikim, beard, no problem, turban, as the Indians. This is a shocking article that has implications for all of us. New York Times. Dutch fertility clinic investigates possible sperm mix-up. Can you imagine AIH, where it's the husband, but I've spoken about this, halakhically, you'll see it in my new book, in Chelikim, I explain it. And here they may have mixed up the sperms. Think what the implications are. Here's a very fascinating article from Jerusalem Post, where two Catholics are talking to each other, or two Christians, Christian, it's not Catholic. Pastor, am I a Christian? And it's a Christian asking the pastor about questions of belief. And you never saw so much double talk in your life. Okay? Here's Chabad, two stories of people and their relationship with the Rebbe. All right, you'll see it. Very fascinating. As usual, the Rebbe, such vision and such understanding. WhatsApp APP that my family has, I don't understand what it's all about, but everything is on it, latest developments, who's getting married, who had a baby, what Sabu is doing, Sabu. And here, New York Times, for millions of immigrants, a common language, WhatsApp, two copies. Here's a very sad story if you want to see. Front page of the Wall Street Journal, a Ponzi scheme that became undone, and unfortunately, all from Jews, including people I know or know the families, and that's the original article. Here's the forwards going crazy. Dramatic Orthodox growth is transforming the American Jewish community. Here is a study, anyone here in medicine, about vaccinations, the whole question of whether vaccinations can cause illness. But here, it deals with religious women who wear modest clothes, and because they wear modest clothes, they don't get enough sun, they don't have enough vitamin D, and this creates problems in their pregnancies. This is, give this to Morty, this is Moment Magazine, I know Morty reads it. It is sickening to see, with all the assimilation and intermarriage, what is on the agenda in America. And finally, I end off very proud of my family. You can come close and see it. Every week, this is part of Makor Rishon. This is Motzach, Motzoi Shabbos. This is their magazine that deals about hip happenings, the new generation, what's going on, some of the questions we discussed in class. And every week they publish a picture. And this magnificent picture is too small here. You have to see it in his office. This is my nephew, Dr. Zev Rothkopf, a well-known dentist, the dentist, and has a big clinic in right on Derech Chavron, I believe it is, not far from where this tragedy happened yesterday, in that new building that was built. They have a lot of students, have offices there, and his this is his vocation is dentistry, but his, what's the word they use?
Avocation
is being a photographer. He has published tens and tens of pictures. My dear students, I want to wish you a very happy Eis Chanukah. I can't wish you a Zeit Chanukah today. No one knows Zeit Chanukah. I couldn't believe it on the radio. They asked this professor yesterday, right before the 3 o'clock news, why is it called Zeit Chanukah on Reshet Bet? And he gave a whole pilpul. Then he gave the real reason. The real reason is V'zot Chanukat HaMizbeach. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Rishat Shalom Yonatan Das V'danya.